Welcome to Fantasy Football Today Dynasty. I am your host, Heath Cummings, here for your rookie quarterback preview. And boy, do we have some excellent guests for you. We've got Thor. What is up, Thor? Thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here. Let's just start right away, but like, tell everybody what you've got going on and where they can find your work.
Hey, thanks for having me, Heath. It's good to be here. You can find me at ThorKU on X. And man, we're working through all the position rankings right now on Fantasy Pros. Almost done with it. It's been a very interesting draft process. Tight end's the last position that I'm working on right now. But once we're done with that on Thursday, my favorite piece of the year of anything I work on drops on Fantasy Pros, which is my 500 player big board with 500 player comps. So check that out on Thursday on Fantasy Pros.
Wow. I thought that your love letter to JJ McCarthy was the favorite thing that you worked on this year, but it's good. There's something that you
that's my second
more
favorite.
Than that. Okay. And Dave Richard is back on FFT Dynasty. Dave, it has been a while. You have been, I don't think knee deep or hip, like shoulder deep in rookie prospect profiles, particularly the quarterbacks over the last month.
Yeah, but not 500 players deep like Thor. So I got a little bit of work to do to get to that level. But yeah, been looking at a lot of the prospects and takes me a long time to get through all the film and all that stuff. But got some good opinions on them. Looking forward to drafting them in our Dynasty League. Oh, wait. I don't have a first round pick in our Dynasty League this year. Not going to be drafting any of these guys, or at least not the top guys. But it's an interesting group. It's an interesting class. And I don't think that there's the term generational talent has been used in this class. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a generational talent in this.
That will be a good that's an excellent topic for the very first quarterback we're going to talk about in just a little bit, because we will on today's show kind of delve into the quarterback evaluation process. So there's a lot of people who say this is the most difficult position to translate what somebody does in college into what they're going to do in the NFL. So we'll talk about maybe the best ways to do that at the top. We will have, just like we have for the other positions, full player profiles on the top four quarterbacks. That's Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and yes, JJ McCarthy. And then we'll have a smattering of thoughts on Bo Nix, Michael Penix, Spencer Rattler, whoever else these guys want to talk about. There might be a couple other quarterbacks that we need to. We got to say something about Emory Hunt's second or third favorite quarterback in this class. So we'll get to that as well. But as always, we start with three questions for our guest. And Dave, we're going to do it a little bit different here because you haven't been here for a while. And I want your information on these topics as well. So I'm going to ask Thor the question, and I want you to follow up just either with agreement or something to add, or just tell him, man, that's wrong, Thor. Okay, question number one. Can you walk everyone through what your quarterback evaluation process looks like?
Yeah, so I guess I'm a little bit different than some other guys that do the NFL draft work, because during, like, in the basically half my year, I cover college football. So right. During that time, you know, I followed the guys out of high school and then through their college football years. I'm watching live. I watch more college football than anyone. I'm watching the MACtion. I'm watching the Mountain West games, Conference USA. We get those midweek now. So I follow them live, you know, during their careers. And then once the spring comes, I switch over to the NFL draft. And then I'll watch all their cut-ups, you know, do the film stuff, and then dive deep into their analytical profiles and then start comparing each guy against each other in terms of that. And then start comparing the profiles, and that's how we stack the positions. And then we stack the 500 board like I was talking about before once we get the positions done.
Very cool. Dave, you've probably done more quarterbacks. Maybe you've caught up with a different position, but you were heavy on the quarterbacks early in the prospect profile process.
Yeah, and you know what I'm doing during the NFL season. It's not watching college football live. I respect the hell out of that, Thor, so nicely done. I start watching the film on a prospect. I'll get through a couple of games, and then I might dial it down and watch some of the TV copy. When I've got questions from the TV copy, I'll go back and check it with the All 22. I'll invariably have questions that I need answered about these prospects. I'll either go back and find the specific types of plays. For example, are they good on third and long? That's something that I've done recently to see which quarterbacks step up. Then I'll find the answers in film. I'll marry it with the stats that are out there for the players. basically come to a conclusion on how I feel about him. Sometimes I ask around. I've got friends in the league that I'll double check my thoughts with and cross-reference against their notes, and I've got my rankings for the quarterback position.
Awesome, awesome stuff from both of you guys. So you can have an answer to both of these questions, or you can just choose one. What would you say is the most under or overrated quarterback trait by the general public? What's the thing that everybody is either overweighing or underweighing?
The most overrated stat, I think, is completion percentage, because I think it takes out context. And this is on my mind right now, because there was a prominent writer today that put out a mock draft, and he put in there that Bo Nix had the most impressive, you know, it was the most accurate quarterback in the class or whatever. And that's just because of his rote completion percentage, which completely removes Bo Nix from the context where that completion percentage was accrued, which was this spoon-fed offensive system where more than one quarter of his attempts were screen passes behind the line of scrimmage. Everything is context, you know, when it's the stats, whatever, and especially right. Something like the completion percentage. So I would say that. And then as far as a trait goes, I would say it's probably arm strength, you know, as far as quarterbacks go.
Isn't it something like 2/3 of his throws were 10 air yards or shorter last year?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So really, you definitely need that context at the bare minimum ADOT for the course of the season. I think people fall in love with highlights. Yeah. And so they'll see the highlight plays with a lot of these players and they'll think, oh, they're amazing. I've got friends that love Michael Penix because all they've seen are the highlights of Penix. They don't consider anything like his mechanics. They don't consider how he does on deep throws compared to short throws. Those are the types of things you got to get in the weeds with these quarterbacks a little bit to find their flaws. Every quarterback's got them. And I think just football fans, they remember the big plays, or they see them play in the big games and they fall in love with these guys and they don't consider those other factors.
Very, very good stuff. I will say that you said it was a prominent NFL writer. I just thought it was Sean Payton that wrote all the nice words about Bo Nix, but we will talk more about Bo Nix and Sean Payton a little bit later in the show. Final question here. How does this quarterback class, Dave, you mentioned that you weren't sure there was a generational talent. Thor, I'll start with you. How does this class?
I'm pretty sure. I don't think there is one.
How does this class compare to the last two quarterback classes?
It's probably better than the last two combined. I guess I would put it that way. Yeah, if you were to combine those two, I think this one is better, the talent. We will get more NFL, qualitatively NFL starters, the quality out of it. I think we're going to get more out of this class.
Well, it's not hard to beat Kenny Pickett's class. and I was
not going out on a limb.
I was a huge CJ Stroud fan last year. I think Caleb is better than Stroud was as a prospect. And I think Daniels might be too. And I know that sounds a little silly after the year that Stroud had. Forget about Stroud's rookie season when I say that. I thought Stroud was great when he was coming out of Ohio State. I think Williams and Daniels are better than Stroud was when they're coming out, which is right now.
Awesome, awesome stuff. Let's take our first short break, and then we will jump into the player profiles. So we will get into the depth of this class and that the large number of starters we may get from it, but we got to start with the clear, in everyone's opinion, apparently 101, Caleb Williams. We're going to go ahead and put him on the Chicago Bears. Thor, when you talk about, and Dave just said he thinks he's a better prospect than CJ Stroud, but he doesn't think there's necessarily a generational prospect in this class. So which side of that are you closer on with Caleb Williams?
I agree with Dave. I don't think that he is a generational prospect. I like this the ceiling with Williams, but I think the risk profile is higher than has been depicted. And I also don't think that he's not Pat Mahomes, you know, or that ridiculous thing. I've been arguing against that since I first heard it. The bonanza comp for him is Aaron Rodgers. And the more, you know, midline outcome would be Kyler Murray, I think is the more reasonable one. What you like about him is the arm and the athleticism, obviously. And what's cool about him is sort of the creativity and getting outside the pocket and the creation, stuff like that. The thing that's concerning about him is you didn't see the timing concepts and the anticipatory throws. And, you know, it's like, can he be taught that for the NFL? He just wasn't asked to do it by Lincoln Riley. The NFL, you have to do that. You can't just do the I'm going to go outside and scramble every single time and then have the receivers break off the routes. It's not going to work. The last couple of years, both times in both of those seasons, Caleb Williams had a longer average time to throw than Justin Fields did. I know Bears fans don't want to hear this, but Justin Fields led the NFL in average time to throw last year. Each of the last two seasons, Caleb Williams averaged more time to throw at USC. Now, like, again, like at the NFL level, he's going to have to do those timing concepts. He's going to have to throw over the middle. At USC, it was either the screen pass or it was, we're going to take a long time. We're going to scramble around and we're going to create. There's going to have to be some of the other stuff at the next level. And the one path for Caleb Williams to play way down, I don't want to call it a bust, but the one path where he greatly disappoints, it would be where if the reason that was done, the reason that Lincoln Riley asked him to do that, it wasn't because Caleb Williams, it was simply he had a better arm and he was a better athlete than, you know, everyone. When he went out on the field, he was by far the best player, but it was that he struggles with those things. So it's Caleb, go out there and do what you're best at. And we're going to have you avoid that stuff. And that he would struggle with that stuff at the next level.
That's part of the mystery of the quarterback evaluation, right? There's all these guys probably going to have NFL things that their coach didn't ask them to do because their coach's main job is to win games. Dave, the two names that he said there, not Mahomes, maybe Kyler Murray. I think that's an interesting kind of leads into a question I have. When we talk about Caleb Williams rushing production the next 3 or 4 years in the NFL, would you expect it to be more like Mahomes? So he's in that maybe 300 yard rushing range, or do you think that he could rush like Kyler Murray has in the NFL and maybe make up for some of his problems or inadequacies as a passer because he's just putting up so much on the ground?
Refresh my memory on Kyler. What's a good average number for his rushing yards?
Let's call it 300 and 600.
Yeah, I think he could be there probably earlier in his career compared to maybe 3-4 years down the road. I loved that he was good in the red zone just overall as a quarterback. And when he got near the goal line, I think it was at the goal line last year, last 2 years, 9 of 11 converting for touchdowns. So I think that he can definitely add an element with his legs. I just don't think he'll be asked to do it as much as someone like Jaden Daniels will be asked to do that.
And it is like so much of that rushing production, which turns into fantasy gold, can either be coach/scheme related or willingness related on the quarterback side. It seems like he's at least willing. Now, you brought up the time to throw in the pocket, Thor. One thing that it seemed to stand out to me in this class is we have some real discrepancies in terms of like sack rate, pocket presence, the way these guys handle pressure. And Caleb Williams isn't particularly good at that. Is that something that we can hope improves? Or as Bears fans just dealt with Justin Fields, do you think he's kind of stuck with that issue?
Well, it's the thing that will improve it is working on those timing concepts and the stuff over the middle, because then the out of the pocket stuff, the off script stuff, the creation stuff, it becomes the thing that's working off of that. And we already know that he's special at that, but then it's those things will be working in conjunction with one another, whereas it's not the only thing that you can do. How easy will it be to defend that at the NFL level when it's the only thing, like the NFL defenders know it's, and the coordinators know it's the only thing that you can do? It's like the thing where, you know, like we see this in baseball, right? Like you see in the baseball draft every year, the high school pitcher that throws 100 miles per hour, and then you see his ERA in high school was like 0.42. And then he goes to minor league baseball and they're like, we have to teach you how to pitch it, how to do a changeup and a curveball. And he can't do it. And then he bumps. That's what they're going to teach Caleb Williams. And it's like, theoretically, it's like, oh, that should be easy. You can already throw 100. You should be able to throw, you know, 78 or 80. But like, we'll have to see. That's the thing that's open for debate, because we just didn't see that. And like last year, he had some ludicrous amount of plays where he took over 6 seconds to throw. Even last year, he improved his average time to throw to 3.16 time 3.16 seconds to pass. I think that was second worst in this class. It's just something that needs to improve. His PFF grade under pressure cratered down to just over 40, like in the aggregate last year, which really bad. The year before it was better. That was the year where he won the Heisman, obviously. People give him the caveat of like, oh, USC's offensive line was bad last year. Sure, but he's doing that playground thing every single time. Modifications of the offense certainly would help, but he needs to also improve at those elements where it's getting the ball out quicker, where it's not just the screen pass stuff, that anticipatory throwing over the middle, those type concepts. You will see him on tape. This is the USC stuff. This isn't just the function of the offense. You will see him askew open receivers right out the get on the route because he wants to wait for longer down the field because he wants to get outside the pocket and we'll wait and I want to get a guy later on. But then he gets himself into trouble. And now, and that's why over his career, I think he fumbled the ball 32 times in 35 games. He didn't throw a lot of interceptions, but that was the stuff outside the pocket where it's like create, create, create. And all of a sudden it's like he has scrambled himself onto a bridge to nowhere. And now someone comes behind him and slaps the ball out.
He created his own chaos, did he not?
Exactly.
That's what I wrote. And that's what I saw too. And I agree 100%. Like he was just so greedy. He's trying to win the Heisman again. It felt like, especially last year. And a lot of the fumbles came because he's holding the ball out like this. I know it's a little tiny blue ball, Heath, but he's holding it like the proverbial loaf of bread. I think if you go and watch him at Oklahoma, the offensive line was a little bit better. Yes. I think you see a few more of those anticipatory throws. I think he can do those things. I love the addition of Keenan Allen. Heath, you know this. As soon as the Bears acquired Keenan Allen, I said, that's it. They're getting Caleb Williams because he's going to be able to help him make those shorter throws and be accurate with it. And as for pressure and short throws, combining that together, this stat kind of freaked me out on Caleb Williams. When he was pressured and throwing under 4 air yards, that's it. He had a 39.1% completion rate, which is low. I can't believe how low it is, but somehow it was higher than what Penix and Drake May did. So short throw, maybe that includes spikes and stuff like that, but really just a mystifying number. Considering those should be throws that he makes all the time.
Okay, we do need to wrap up on Caleb Williams, but it's worth saying he is like the unquestioned 101 also. So there may have been a little bit more negative there. Let's just go just real quick, elevator pitch, Thor, on why he's definitely the best quarterback in this class.
Because he's got a stupid arm and he's a stupid athlete. And he has like The other thing I'd say about him is he has sort of an artist creativity to him. And that's the compliment. I know we touched it. We tinge it negative, but there is this artist genius creativity to the way that he plays and it can go both ways. And when it's the negative aspect, it can go too far the other way. And obviously the situation last year was bad. And that's when you saw the manifestation go the other way. But when it's going good, there is this touch of genius to the creative way that he sees the field.
Okay, rapid fire now. Just one last question, both of you to answer. Dave, you can start. Because he is, even in rookie Superflex drafts, he's also already locked into 101. Like, everybody's taking him there. But there's still a lot of one quarterback dynasty leagues out there. So what's the earliest reasonable time to look at Caleb Williams in a league where you can only start one quarterback?
105.
So four wide receivers ahead of him, or three in Bowers?
Three wide receivers and a tight end. I mean, we got to see where everybody lands. Brian Thomas goes to Buffalo. It's going to be 106.
Okay. That sounds good. Let's move on to QB2. And again, I put these guys in my order. So it does not necessarily mean that both Dave and Thor agree with the order we're going in. We are going to the late bloomer, Jaden Daniels, who would not have been in consideration for this pick any time before, I don't think, probably what, 9 months ago, 8 months ago, more than that. But he was an absolute superstar in his final season at LSU. He possesses athleticism that is, I think, probably unrivaled in the class. And his deep ball success and accuracy is intoxicating. So how do you compare Daniels to Caleb Williams, Thor?
Uh, It's a different thing, right? Daniels brings two superpowers to the NFL. Number one, he's going to be one of the great scramblers that we've ever seen from day one, and he's a downfield assassin. So those are the two things, and then everything else builds off that, but that embeds a very high floor, and it starts with the ceiling as well, and then we'll see where the rest of the stuff goes. His game presents a math and a spacing problem for defensive coordinators. Because of the downfield thing, you have to keep two safeties back. You're playing with fire if you don't. I mean, you saw that last year, that the constitution of that offense, and we talk about this when we talk about the receiver class, the usage with Brian Thomas, it was so heavily downfield. And even with Malik Nabers, you know, he's this darty receiver, but a lot of his usage went downfield as well. It was because Daniels was so good down the field. So they had in the SEC, they had to keep two safeties back. The problem with that is Daniels is such a dominant scrambler. He's going to be a top five scrambler all time in the NFL. So you can't keep a spy on him. And then, so then it's like, well, what do we do? Do we try to speed up his process? Like earlier in his career at Arizona State, the issue with him is he saw the field slowly. You know, like he had all the physical ability. It's why Herm Edwards and Antonio Pierce, are you listening? You know, very interested in Las Vegas, helped bring him into Arizona State. But you saw all the physical ability. He started as a true freshman. But when you watched him there, it was like you could see the gears turning in his head as a true freshman. And so the game going, it just devolved everything. It was like this chain reaction. Then all his physical skills would go down. But now he's seeing the field so much better. And so everything plays up with his game. And so when you blitz him now, he was the number one quarterback PFF charting last year against the blitz. So it's like, how do you defend the guy? It becomes really, really difficult. In the pocket, he's become really good reading the defense, the coverages. LSU did something to help him improve with this. They have this system. They put him in like a VR kind of a thing where he sees the defenses, you know, the different coverages, could see the formations. He got so good at this the last couple of years, seeing the plays, pointing different guys out. They started running the thing at double speed, you know, where he was pointing it out and correctly identifying the pre-snap stuff. And then during the play, identifying which receiver to go to. So it became like Neo. Before the game, he was playing it essentially in at fast forward. He's a very, very good prospect. I know it's the elevated age, but people need to keep in mind, he started 5 years in college. He was recruited out of high school, started as a true freshman for an NFL head coach, Herm Edwards. And then the other guy that brought him in is a current NFL head coach in Antonio Pierce. And then the guy that brought him into LSU, Brian Kelly, is one of the better college coaches that we have. So there's contextual things to keep in mind there. The 2021 season was the one really down season that he had in college. But that Arizona State team was a garbage fire for reasons that were outside of Jaden Daniels. They were in a scandal and different stuff like that. And it was coming out of COVID. Ricky Pearsall transferred out of that team and a whole gamut of other people. There's contextual things to keep in mind. But I really like Jaden Daniels as a prospect.
Dave, I think it's easy to make this comparison and maybe even a little bit lazy, but does he have the same upside as Lamar Jackson?
As a thrower, he's better. As a runner, he's worse. And as a thrower, I think he's got better accuracy than Lamar. There's always been times year after year where Lamar is just a little bit off. It's not a consistent thing, but I think that just as a thrower, certainly coming out, I think that Daniels is better there. As a runner, Lamar is faster, so he's going to make defenses really, really pay. But I think Daniels is fast enough. I obviously expect him to run quite a bit and think that he should be used as a dual threat that's in some sort of version of the air raid offense. But if he ends up going to a team that runs West Coast, I think he'll be able to be successful there too because of his accuracy. Not only was he amazing on those short throws, but he had the best accuracy, I think, in the whole FBS when it came to deeper throws. And it's not because he's got Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas camping under helium balloons. He's putting the ball in tight spaces for these guys to get it. There are multiple throws to Nabers down the sideline where Nabers has a defender on his hip and the ball, he could have handed him the ball. That's how good the placement was. So Jaden Daniels, great thrower. He's improved. You could see the footwork improvement from Arizona State to LSU as well. And he knows where to go with the football pre and post snap. Really, it's a great deal for coaching staffs. The only thing they have to worry about is whether or not he can handle the physicality of the NFL. He's definitely lean, but he's tall. He's not that much leaner than CJ Stroud. Stroud handled it fine. Bryce Young is tiny. He handled it mostly fine.
Okay, so Thor, we had a comment, and I think a lot of people think this about Jaden Daniels. One downside, the dude gets rocked. And I will say, like, watching Josh Allen play football, if I was a Bills fan, I would be so terrified and a little bit frustrated that he just continues to take those types of hits almost and deliver those types of hits that he does as a scrambling quarterback. He is not avoiding contact. Well, Jaden Daniels is not built like Josh Allen, but he runs to contact like he thinks he is.
He thinks he's Derrick Henry. It's crazy.
It's kind of hard for me to believe after playing 5 years of high-level college football that people weren't telling him to stop doing that. Do you think we just have to live with that injury risk? And then also, like, it's not the only downside, right?
He runs like the Roadrunner, right? Like it's like he's totally averse to the risk of injury. And it's kind of crazy that it hasn't happened yet, because you saw him get into car crashes. The difference between him and Lamar Jackson as scramblers is Lamar has better discretion for sure, but Lamar also has the better agility, right? Mm. Daniels is more the north-south guy, but that also sets Daniels up for these crazy collisions where the guy's coming downhill and then Daniels is shooting upfield and he'll just get blasted. Sometimes you saw him just get nailed backwards. Like, it's like 5 yards. It was, you know, like a cartoonish type collision. Yes, that is absolutely something he needs to learn. It's like the dude is descending down. Like, you need to put up the white flag right now and slide. And there's a couple other things he needs to keep getting better at. People bring up the pressure to sack rate is the popular one with Daniels. This process is the popular one with everyone. I'd never heard pressure to sack rate so much than this process. It's a little different with Daniels than a couple of the other dudes. There's some context that as far as his one goes. Dave was bringing this up, and I really liked his point with it about how quiet Daniels' feet have gotten in the pocket with LSU. I totally agree with that. And he goes across the progression. The nuance with him, with how it's become at LSU, is that's the case, and he goes through the progressions. But like when he decides to, so it's like, I'm a thrower. But when it's, and he's waiting, and he can wait as long as possible because he knows he has that other superpower. So when he pulls it down to run, he can wait till the last possible second. But when he yanks it, when he tucks it down, he's running every single time. So rarely when he moves off the spot and he pulls it down, he's not moving to then throw it. Right. Like JJ McCarthy and Caleb Williams, when they're moving around, it's because they're going to a different spot buying time so that they can throw it. When Daniels pulls that thing down, it's because he is running. That is another thing he needs to work on, because in scouting reports around the NFL, they will have in there for their defenders, they will tell them in the pregame meeting and during the week, when you to the defensive backs, when you see Daniels pull that thing down, peel off your man and come downhill and attack that kid, because he is not going to throw it. That is going to have a deleterious effect on his scrambling as well, because then they're just going to know that as well. So that would be one other thing. But the one point, just really quickly, that I want to make about the pressure to sack thing is this goes in conjunction with that, which is his sacks had shorter yardage than the other quarterbacks, because typically what you saw is it was like he has pretty good awareness of this. And typically what you saw is it would be the tuck thing, and then he'd start to run, and then he would get basically taken down as he was starting into that process. But he needs to modulate basically that calculator in his head of, you know, the time when to hold and fold, basically, to use a Kenny Rogers.
We'll finish up. And I think it's funny that he spent so much time in the VR machine, because I have heard several people say that he kind of plays quarterback like he's playing Madden. Yeah. He's going to drop back, see if the exactly. Deagle's open. If it's not, we're going to hit the turbo button. We're taking off. Dave, we'll start with you, Thor. You can follow up. So where does Daniels rank for you in this class amongst the quarterbacks? And then just a random guy that I don't know why I chose him. Would you rather have Jaden Daniels or Anthony Richardson?
I think I'd rather have Daniels than Richardson. Okay. And he's right behind Caleb Williams.
Clear 102. Okay. What about you, Thor?
I compare Daniels to a blast from the past, Randall Cunningham.
Yeah, okay. Me too. That's amazing.
Yeah. Great minds. And I also have Daniels as QB2 in this class.
Excellent stuff. Let's move on then to the guy I've listed here as QB3. It is Drake May, another guy with plenty of question marks, maybe sneaky athleticism, we might say, much younger, of course, than Jaden Daniels. What's your evaluation on Drake May, Thor?
I really like the arm. And when the situation is advantageous, like it was in 2022 when he was in Phil Longo's system and the supporting cast was better, they had Josh Downs and Green out there, a couple of guys that got drafted. He put up the bazooka stats. That Phil Longo's system, that's the one where it's the spread and they count the numbers pre-snap. And then when they have the one-on-one shots downfield, they'll take it every single time. And he was really good at that. Longo had worked with Matt Corral at Ole Miss before that, Sam Howell before at UNC. And so that, you know, and Drake May, that his best thing, it's that howitzer of an arm he has. And that's absolutely real. The hype is real with his arm talent. The other thing I like about him, and something he got to show off a little bit this year, I have a lot of nitpicks with the offensive coordinator that they brought in. I knew that was a mistake right from the get. The guy's kind of a dope. So I will give Drake May at least the contextual benefit of the doubt as far as the system he was playing in. But the one thing it did afford him was he got the opportunity to throw over the middle. He's very good at that as well, which is why he's a good fit, for instance, for the Kevin O'Connell offense or would be for the McVay Shanahan type deal. Him and McCarthy are very good at throwing over the middle. The nitpick I have about Drake May is when I watch his tape. Okay, well, first I'll say the thing I like about this is I like the way his pocket management right from the get. Like he'll take it out of the shotgun and he does this. He has sort of an unorthodox sort of bicycle backpedaling type setup where he sort of backpedals out. He doesn't go square. He backpedals out and I like it because he can see the whole field for longer. So that's kind of cool. So that's his setup. And then he moves around well, where it's like, you guys know that meme where it's like the guy where it's like the little figure. And then there's a whole bunch of people. And every time he moves around, the people move away from him. Do you know the meme I'm talking about? Yes. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but that reminds me of when May is like the beats after the snap, how he sort of manipulates the pocket to keep sort of the mini halo in front of him for the spacing. He has a really good feel for keeping that little runway in front of him so that he has that space to step into the throw. Just manipulating that pocket for that spacing. I like all that stuff. That stuff's really good. The 3-4 beats after the snap is really, really good. My nitpick with him is when that pressure starts getting there, when the enemy starts getting to the gate, I'm not talking about the moment when he's about to get blasted. I'm talking about like the 2-3 beats right before that. And when he's like, oh, Drake, it's about to start coming. You need to make a decision. What I notice is he's like, all right, go. And his mechanics, he would put them in fast forward. His decision-making process would get put in fast forward. So he would make a quick decision, wouldn't always be the best one. But even when it was, the mechanics, he'll just askew them. So it's a really quick thing. The upper body goes really quick. Sometimes he will totally askew the lower half. Sometimes he'll take the shot, but other times he'll fade away from it. And that's where you see the errancy under duress, which you can also see manifest in the numbers. His under pressure numbers were not good. And I think that this is the reason because the mechanics get totally askewed in those scenarios. And like I said, the decision making, there's a similar effect going on there.
Dave, do you see potential greatness in Drake May?
I think he's got a pretty high ceiling. So sure. I think he's got a strong arm. Thor mentioned the over the middle throws. I think he's the best anticipatory thrower in the class. He didn't shy away from tight window throws either. I think his mobility is underrated, but Thor made it sound like it was a nitpick to talk about that. The rush mechanics, the rush footwork. I think it's larger than that. I thought his arm throwing motion was a little extended. I thought his footwork wasn't great consistently. I thought he struggled to even recognize where pass rush pressure was coming from. So I think he needs a little bit more coaching. And so if he goes to a team where he's either learning on the fly or he waits a few weeks before he gets on the field and he makes some progress in those areas, I think he can be pretty good. But I think a team's got to realize that he's not a finished product and could regress, like we saw Josh Allen do the first couple of years of his career before he finally got it all down and became a better thrower.
I think anyone who drafts him would be pretty happy if he could just follow that exact Josh Allen path. We'll just punt the next 2 years and then go be awesome. But no. So I mentioned Thor, that the sneaky athleticism, kind of tongue in cheek, but this is a guy who could give you 25, 30 rushing yards per game, right?
He's a guy for me where you can have a couple of the RPO where you can keep it a couple of times in the short yardage and then around the goal line. The thing I'll say about him is that kid is tough when he keeps the ball. Sometimes maybe too much. He's one of those guys that will lower the shoulder and like he's, you know, with Jaden Daniels, we were sort of joking around about it. At least Drake May's got the bigger frame. But yeah, he has some of those Bug Bunny moments on film as well. Some fun sort of moments like that. But that kid is, he's like, when I was saying the thing about the fading away, sometimes when he's getting hit in the pocket, I did not mean to insinuate he is not tough, because you can clearly see he is tough when he is the runner, and especially around the goal line in the NFL, speaking to the fantasy thing, I think his team absolutely will use him around the goal line as a runner. You can absolutely certainly on the sneaks, but also within the five, you can absolutely use him on those concepts. And I think he'll pile up some touchdowns doing that.
Dave, you mentioned that he really would benefit from some more coaching. And I think, like, when you're talking about these quarterbacks, for me at least, I look at New England as the oh no situation. And it's even more so for me at least, than it would be for Jaden Daniels.
Yep.
Because Jaden Daniels' skill set and as Thor said, his superpowers could really just succeed in a lot more. It feels to me like May might be a little bit more situation dependent. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. And I think you could say that about almost all the quarterbacks in this class. I don't think that there's, like, Daniels would be okay if he went to New England. Would he be amazing for fantasy? Not as good as if he went to Minnesota or Las Vegas or pretty much anywhere else. And I think we can say the same thing for May there too. But I do think, I've looked at Alex Van Pelt's track record, the quarterbacks that he's worked with, the type of quarterback that he was. I think they're drooling over May. He seems like the guy that would best fit what they want to do offensively.
Well, that might be good for them. Maybe it'll even be good for him. Thor, I've made you wait long enough. I mean, you were so kind to come on this podcast to give me your time. We're talking about quarterbacks, and I made you wait 38 minutes before we bring up J.J. McCarthy. So let's get right into it. Why are you – first off, let's just start. Why are you
– I have no idea who you're talking about. I have no preference for who my Vikings take in the draft. Well,
why are you known as the J.J. McCarthy guy?
Because I started, you know, back in early February, late January, I went on this rant about how people were ranking him as a late round two guy. And I said he's a top 10 prospect in the class. And I didn't understand why – you know, on some of these two early boards, why he was being ranked as a late round two guy. You know, again, coming as a guy that watches college football, covers college football, and then goes into the draft, it was pretty clear watching it, especially down the stretch there, that J.J. McCarthy was a top 10 prospect in this class. The recruiting pedigree, the athleticism, the arm strength, the accuracy, on and on and on, the throwing on the run. He just had all that different stuff. Is he the complete package? Maybe not, but is that the package of a guy that goes in the top 10? Yeah. So you know, I was sort of responding to a narrative, and then obviously, you know, since then, that's, you know, he's just a top 10 guy. So, you know, that's what I'm known as now. But yeah, I mean, he's a quality prospect, and we'll see where it ends up going on draft day. But yes, speaking to the athleticism, you know, six best three cone time at the NFL combine, regardless of positions, at 17 pounds heavier than his Michigan bio, which checked the size concerns. His max velocity throw, 61 miles per hour, was 1 mile per hour less than the NFL combine record, to the arm strength stuff. And then, you know, accuracy, he was fifth in the FBS last year and on target rate. And then the throwing on the run thing, like I said, I love that about him. It speaks to the athleticism in conjunction with that arm strength. You have a lot of quarterback prospects where they're a good athlete and they have a good arm, but those two things do not work with one another on the field. Joe Milton being an example of this, arguably, we talked about this a little bit ago, Jaden Daniels, sort of, right? Like where he doesn't really throw on the run. JJ McCarthy last year was 72% and change completions overall against the best defensive strength on average of any of these top quarterbacks. When he was scrambling, 71% and change. So he barely loses any accuracy whatsoever when he's scrambling, which is sort of unheard of. And then, of course, everyone out there has heard of all the high leverage stats with JJ McCarthy, best quarterback in this class on third downs. And we mentioned before, he's one of the best, one of the two best between him and Drake May, throwing over the middle, those NFL concepts, the intermediate throws 9 to 20 yards down the field. NFL coaches absolutely love that stuff. And of course, a sitting NFL head coach for the Chargers believes he should be the first overall pick. The guy that he won the national title for last year is a 20-year-old true junior.
Okay, Dave, so he mentioned that. I'm glad you said that 20-year-old part, because there, I've heard some people talk like JJ McCarthy might be the guy that we're talking about in amongst the top four who is most likely to need a year of seasoning or a year sitting on the bench, may not be ready to start week one of next year. I think the other part that goes hand in hand with that, and you can kind of talk about both pieces, is we're comparing a lot more reps for most of these guys than we are JJ McCarthy in terms of just dropping back and passing, because Michigan wanted to run the ball 9 out of 11 times. Do either of those things, like, does that give him a little bit more upside long-term, or any more concern in year one?
Well, I look at it a little bit differently. First of all, I think he could start week one this year. I think he's ready for that now, especially if it's an offense that he's comfortable in and is surrounded with good talent. If he ends up being Minnesota's quarterback, like Thor is seemingly projecting, I think he'd be pretty good. Certainly would not be a bad thing. Let's put it this way. It could be worse immediately out of the gate for Jefferson, Addison, and then eventually Hockenson when he comes back. But I think he's got a high floor. I think he's ready to go. Ran a ton of pro style concepts. Thor talked about the middle of the field throws. He did throw plenty of anticipatory passes as well. And as for the whole, well, he didn't throw that much. He did what he was asked to do. He was still a fantastic prospect. Did you know he was a Chicago guy, Heath?
So he grew
up in Park Ridge, Illinois, big time prospect.
And a hockey player.
Yeah, hockey player, so he's tough. Went to Michigan, waited his turn there. And then very early on in 2022, he got under center, and he didn't give up the job. And I think that he's absolutely the type of guy that can go to a team now. I think the flaws with him are kind of small compared to a lot of other players, and I think he does have some good upside if it's the right landing spot. If it's the right team with the good coaching staff that gets behind him and gives him the chance to do well, it wouldn't surprise me. I said it with New England with Drake May. I think McCarthy could flourish there too.
Okay, Thor. So you're on the clock. Is it JJ McCarthy or is it Drake May, and why?
JJ for me. Yeah. And I totally agree with Dave. I do think that McCarthy could start earlier on. For me, it's May is the guy that you needs a little bit of seasoning. For some of the reasons that we were mentioning before, McCarthy last year, in an NFL style system for NFL coaches currently in the NFL, won that national championship. And by the way, you know, for all that narrative of like, oh, you know, he was carried there, whatever. Those are people that weren't watching last year. Michigan does not win the national title without JJ McCarthy. In fact, JJ McCarthy was the one that sent Nick Saban into the retirement home. They came back in that game because of JJ McCarthy. In the second half, it was JJ McCarthy. Made some incredible play. You don't see other people make. People need to go back and watch the play where they throw it out and then they throw it back to McCarthy, and then he catches the ball with one hand, pirouettes around. He's about to get blasted, somehow gets the ball off, throws it downfield. Roman Wilson catches it. And they came back from a double-digit deficit, and then they end up winning the game in overtime. But for me, it is McCarthy, and he's the guy, like, you could play him early. Would it be on a playoff contender? I'm not sure about that, but the Vikings could be the exception to that. He can absolutely run a system. Like I said, you saw that last year. He's not going to make mistakes. that last year, outside of the, like after the Bowling Green game, the Bowling Green game was weird in September, but he only had one interception after that. And you're talking about these nasty defenses that he was playing in procession, Penn State, Ohio State, Iowa, Alabama, Washington in the national title game, just over and over again. So I do think that he could play early, J.J. McCarthy.
That is J.J. McCarthy. Those are your top four quarterbacks in the 2024 draft class. We're going to take one more break, and then we'll get to the other guys. Okay, Dave, so that was rude. I called these other guys the other guys. Who's your favorite quarterback in this class that we've not talked about yet, and why?
It's Penix, but keep it in pencil. It's either going to be Penix or Rattler for me.
Okay, and that's in. I think that's interesting. And I had a Penix question here, so I'll just ask you, Thor. How does somebody as fast as Michael Penix do as little on the ground?
That's interesting, and it goes to it's sort of an eye of the beholder question. So Kalen DeBoer coached Penix at Indiana, and he's also the reason why Tom Allen got a ludicrous extension from Indiana, but we don't have time to talk about that. But anyway, Penix at Indiana actually ran a lot more. He went to Indiana as a dual threat guy. People that watch college football, they'll remember the epic upset that Indiana had of Penn State, where Penix reached the ball. This is during the COVID season, where he reached the ball over the goal line. You know, he had to run around, and you know, he made a bunch of athletic plays like that. But the issue was he suffered four straight season-ending injuries at Indiana, all four of his seasons, including two ACL tears. Then he goes to Washington, and then, of course, Washington hired, you know, Kalen DeBoer gets hired by Washington. Kalen DeBoer brings Penix to Washington. And then, curiously, Michael Penix never left the pocket again. He becomes a stationary pocket passer. But come to find out, he had not lost any of the athleticism. So you start wondering, it was the same coach. Why did he never leave the pocket again? Here is my theory. I think Kalen DeBoer told Penix, you do not leave that pocket for two reasons. The big one being, we cannot afford for you to break again. I think that was the big one. The other one, and this is the dirty little secret about Michael Penix, when he moves his feet whatsoever, the more he moves his feet, the more his accuracy starts to depreciate. I think it was 10% off of his the initial completion percentage loses when his or drops when his feet are shuffling. And then it's 10 more percent drops off when he is outright scrambling. So it's like you're both protecting him from getting injured again. And then also you're telling him, keep those feet set in the set pocket, because that's where your accuracy plays up.
Okay, Dave, so let's just do it. We'll do the other lazy comparison. Michael Penix, Tua Tagovailoa. Is there any hope that Penix gets to Tua's level? Could he be better?
I think he could be better than Tua. I think he's got a stronger arm than Tua. So right there, to me, that stands out. I think he can also read and process his defenses better than Tua could when he came out of Alabama, and maybe even now. Doesn't need things necessarily spelled out for him like we've seen in Miami. I'm going to go ahead and say, yeah. And they both have injury concerns. Penix with his knees and shoulders, and Tua with his head.
But yeah, right. So you mentioned Rattler as the other guy, and we'll get to Bo Nix in just a second. But what is it specifically that you like so much about Rattler? And is it just going to be for him dependent? Like, we've heard a lot of wild discrepancy in what the NFL coaches think of Rattler. Mm-hmm. Is it just going to be dependent on where he ends up going on draft day?
Well, I think he might end up being a backup too. And it wouldn't surprise me if he has a path that kind of starts out like Dak, where he's the backup to a good quarterback. Like, imagine him going to Dallas. He's a round two, round three pick where the Cowboys take as a leverage play just in case they decide to move on from Dak. And then he eventually gets the opportunity. I think he's got good enough mechanics. I think he's got a strong arm. I think he does throw with good touch at times. Took care of the football most of the time. Obviously, pressure was not very good to him. He also ran a little bit more of a simplistic offense than we'd like to give him credit for. And he definitely had big eyes for the big play, kind of like Caleb Williams had, more of a downfield thrower, would run at times, but I don't think he's necessarily a dual threat type of quarterback. And then there's other things in his past that kind of makes you scratch your head, and that an NFL front office would have to be comfortable with when it comes to Rattler. But I think he's just a little bit more aggressive and has a good strong arm compared to Bo Nix. Bo has a strong arm too. I just think Rattler's aggressiveness, the fact that he takes care of the football most of the time, those are things that stand out to me.
Okay, Thor. So you said several months ago, J.J. McCarthy is not a late round two prospect. He's a top 10 prospect. When you look at Spencer Rattler, late round two, is that too high, too low, or just about right for him?
It's right around there. I think I'll have him early to mid third. So right around there. I do have Rattler ahead of Bo Nix. Rattler, I am behind Penix. I have him, well, that'd be QB6. So yeah, I have him there. There's, he'd be the guy I'd take a chance on if you miss out on those top guys, you know, sort of the next stop on the train stop. And he's the only other guy that I see in this class that has the potential to, be, you know, give you starting utility potentially. I think that there's a path there. People need to remember this was the number 11 overall player in his recruiting class. The first ever guy that Lincoln Riley had plucked out of high school that had started for him. Like prior to that, it was all those guys that were the transfer portal guys, you know, Kyler and Jalen Hurts and Baker Mayfield. And then it was Rattler, and Rattler was incredible his first year as a starter. He was number 4 in the FBS and PFF grade as a redshirt freshman. He led the FBS and PFF big-time throws under pressure and passing grade out of structure. He was getting evoked to Pat Mahomes in terms of that coming out of his redshirt freshman season. But then, of course, a guy named Caleb Williams, who we talked about earlier, shows up in Norman, and then Lincoln Riley started talking to USC, and then the whole thing happened. And then Spencer Rattler ends up in Columbia, South Carolina, which, you know, it was great that he found a home. It turned out to be a terrible stylistic match for him, though, because South Carolina, while they had skill talent, they had a horrific offensive line that ranked outside the top 100 in PFF pass blocking grade both seasons. This was a horrible fit specifically for Spencer Rattler's game because, as Dave was alluding to, Spencer Rattler, it's sort of like both Caleb or, you know, I it's sort of like Bryce Young from the last class where he likes to do the scramble around thing to buy time and then throw, but he likes to stay behind the line of scrimmage to do it. You can't buy time behind a horrific offensive line where you're getting immediate pressure. So the first 10 games of 2022, Spencer Rattler was dead to rights right after he got the ball. He had to modify his game. That happened at the end of 2022. He lit up Clemson. He lit up Tennessee. He lit up Notre Dame in the bowl game. And then this year, the coaching staff helped him out a bit. There was more quick hitting concepts to keep the pass rush at bay. They had way less offensive talent. It was basically Xavier Leggett and pray for rain because everyone else transferred out. But at least they had made some of those modifications. But I like his – he's on the small side for sure, but he has a very snappy arm. And yet, like Dave was mentioning, he has that gumption to go downfield, and he's always looking downfield. So he will attack. He also attacks the middle sector of the field, those NFL money zones like we were talking about before. Has he been scarred by the last couple of years behind that shoddy offensive line? That's what we'll have to find out. But I would pay I would buy the ticket to get on that carnival ride somewhere in that first part of the third round to find out with him if I missed out on those quarterbacks early on.
Okay, so it's time for the Bo Nix portion of the program. We've hinted around a little bit. This episode may not be as high on him as some people, namely Sean Payton. Dave, the issues with using his completion percentage, I think most people can get behind that and understand that. But if Sean Payton drafts him and he goes to that system, does it really matter? Can't he do pretty much all of the things that Payton's going to have to ask a quarterback to do?
Sure, but I wouldn't expect maximum efficiency, and therefore he shouldn't be counted on to be a dynamite fantasy quarterback. Could he be like Russell Wilson last year in Denver?
He's better suited for Peyton's system than Russell Wilson, isn't he?
He's better suited for that type of offense that they ran last year. And listen, any quarterback could do that. It's kind of easy stuff. But eventually, Denver's going to be down 7 with 3 minutes to play. And Bo Nix isn't going to be able to dink and dunk the whole way down. Maybe if they have 3 timeouts. What the hell?
I was going to say, Thor, that sounds like the perfect situation for a Sean Payton Bo Nix marriage. Okay. And then the other team in prevent.
And things could get a little bit messy there. I worry about him going back to the level that he Now, he didn't play at a great level when he was at Auburn, but he wasn't asked to keep it light and keep it short like he did at Oregon. And yeah, he did that well. Can he be an unbelievably productive NFL quarterback doing that? I mean, if he's throwing it 40 times a game, maybe. So a lot of qualifiers for him to actually be good for statistical purposes, if that's the offense and if that's the game that he's going to be in.
Is he very situation dependent in your mind, Thor? Like, I know you got him behind all the guys we've talked about so far, but could you see a situation where Denver does something that we don't think they should, drafts him early and you like the fit, and then he moves up?
Well, yeah. I mean, teams do stupid stuff every year. So, yeah, I mean, I expect Bo Nix to be overdrafted. It would be egregious if he went in the first round. But, yeah, I mean, my Vikings took Christian Ponder in the first round once, so you can't put it past anybody. But, yeah, Bo Nix, it's, for me, he will be a late third rounder on my board. He was a guy as a true freshman at Auburn. He got on the field. He played right away. He had 103 screen passes that year. They were babying him. You know, he was just out of high school. Last year at Oregon, he had 106 screen passes. J.J. McCarthy in his entire career had less screen passes than Bo Nix had in each of his college seasons, or four of his five college seasons. I'm sorry. Bo Nix's entire career was like this, where it was just throwing the screen passes. In Gus Malzahn, Dave was sort of making this point. In Gus Malzahn's system at Auburn, they asked you a little bit more to stand in the pocket and to go deep. Javon Baker's eval, we talk about this out of UCF. That's where Gus Malzahn is now. There was heavy downfield passing in that. You know, his ADOT was super duper high. But where that's where Bo Nix really struggled, was sitting back in the pocket and then having to go beyond, one, two reads, whatever, and then have to denote the pass rush and then get the ball downfield. That's the thing that Oregon system inoculated him from. It was all pre-snap reads, which is why Bo Nix is last year, I think he had the fourth fastest release time in the FBS, because all the decisions were made for him pre-snap based on the math. It was literally, it's like elementary school. You count the numbers on each side of the field, and then the answer is literally given to you. So you know which dude you are throwing to, and then you immediately do it after the snap. And then sometimes you got the one-on-one shot. Those were the times where it went down the field. But again, that was denoted before the snap. How does someone explain to me how this is translatable to the NFL, where you have to make your decisions post-snap? Right. Bo Nix has never done that before. In addition, he struggles, again, denoting the pass rush. We saw at Auburn, he was a crash test dummy with the guy coming from the blind side. He would just get ragdolled there. The other thing is, I like the upper body mechanics. Like, he is good with that stuff. That's where you see, like, the short and the intermediate accuracy. He does throw that tight spiral there. He's got the spin on it. Downfield is where you got the issues. The mechanics with the lower body aren't there, and he doesn't have the howitzer for an arm. So you see he's got to throw the kitchen sink on it. We were down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. Bo Nix was an all-time checkdown artist there. He did not want to show the NFL his arm strength because he doesn't have it. So he was totally avoiding those kind of downfield throws and was like, hey, guys, look at how accurate I am within 10 yards. You know, and it's like, Bo, we know. We saw 5 years of that. Throw it down the field. But he wasn't going to do that because he can't do that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, is Sean Payton going to overdraft him? Yes, probably. Should people be citing his accuracy to call him the most accurate quarterback in the class? No. The guy threw, you know, again, 27% of his passes were screen passes. It's that's what his accuracy profile is based on.
We'll finish up with this, and it's a nice juxtaposition. A quick breakdown question from the chat. Quick breakdown on Joe Milton from Thor before this pod wraps up. Dave, you can just follow with your thoughts on Milton.
He was another guy who was at the Senior Bowl who showed off. He was like the opposite of Bo Nix. He showed off his cannon, but there's a lot of his game that needs work. He's a project type pick. More than likely, I'd be shocked if he went in round three, a day three type pick, where a team gets him, they love the cannon, and they think that they can try and turn him into something a little bit more refined than that.
Any hope for that to actually happen, Thor?
It's like, what is it, Lloyd Christmas in Dumb and Dumber? It's like one in a million. So you're saying there's a chance? or Fran Fraschilla that 1 year in the draft where he's like 2 years away from being 2 years away. I would do it sixth round. I would throw the dart if you needed a developmental guy. He's a great kid. Everybody raves about him. Jim Nagy raved about him. You can bring him in. The tools are insane. He has an all-world cannon. It's him. I mentioned before McCarthy was 1 mile per hour beneath the max velocity record. Joe Milton tied it. The guy he tied was Josh Allen. Those two guys may have the strongest arms on planet Earth for throwing a football. Just a ludicrous arm. But it goes beyond that. Joe Milton at 6'5", what is it, 240, 245, does standing backflips before games. And he's also a great runner. Gets to 20 miles per hour when he's out and running. It's the decision-making thing has always been the bugaboo. He makes ridiculous throws. Like his first year starting, I remember during the COVID season, he made this was back when he was in Michigan. He made this insane throw scrambling out to the left. And then he threw it against the grain 50 yards down the field near the pylon. And he completed this ball against the Gophers. The problem has always been the decision-making. He can't do it. And then the accuracy is like Nuke LaLouche, but I would bring him in just on that one in a million shot. And you can just see if the light ever turns on. I think that the greater odds are that he's going to wash out very quickly. But you don't see guys with that tool, those tools. They're insane.
Dave, Thor, thank you both very much. Fantastic job breaking down this quarterback class. Go follow Thor on X. I was really maybe most impressed by the fact that he said X on his first attempt and didn't say what his handle was on Twitter. That was awesome also, at ThorKU. Go check out his work over at Fantasy Pros. We will be back with this show on Friday with our last position. We are breaking down Brock Bowers, the tight end position. We will talk to you on Friday.